Welcome to our study for December 24th, 2023 of the Common Era. It's 1521 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again today for our study of the Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 2. Now we're at the final paragraph, which is paragraph 12, and we're going to be starting the book of Ezekiel today, continuing 2 Samuel, and we'll do the first chapter of the letter of 1 John, Jehovah willing. But first, in our C-cubed article, shall we begin, little ones? For the purpose of authenticity, I would like to explain a little background of the discovery of the Exodus at 1493 BCE. Since some of the later discoveries obscured it, I had been researching the dating for the establishment of Solomon's Temple, which convention puts at 967 BCE by the overlapping of the reigns of the kings of Israel. We don't agree with the overlapping, although Jehovah's Witnesses had been dating it. And Jehovah's Witnesses don't agree with the overlapping. They'd been dating it at 1034 BCE. And it appeared to me by the research of many sources that it was in fact datable to nearly 1015 BCE. Later I adopted 1014, adding the 480 years of 1 Kings chapter 6 verse 1, which is the time of the founding of Solomon's temple after the Exodus, I arrived at 1485 BCE, computed as the date of the Exodus. 1015 plus 480 equals 1495. After continued research with only a self-satisfaction, in other words, I was smugly self-satisfied at that point, but I didn't really have any deep satisfaction. It occurred to me one day to Google the date 1495 BCE, only to immediately find someone who agreed with it exactly and backed it up with a long list of corroborating dates, too. Most of the information, those corroborating dates, did not agree with any of my datings or with what the facts appeared to be any earlier than the date of 1495 BCE. So in other words, the only date that was close was 1495. And it then became clear that the reigns of the kings of Egypt must either agree or disagree at the time of the Exodus. In other words, according to the Bible, the Pharaoh dies at the Exodus. He dies by being drowned in the Red Sea, right when the Israelites cross the Red Sea. Okay, since the Pharaoh is swept away and dies, according to the clearly specific account of God. Therefore, the Egyptian king must die, and the chronology of Egypt will either agree or not, because the king will either die in the right year or he won't. Pharaoh yokes his chariots and brings them with him as he chases God's people into the Red Sea. And not one Egyptian remains, according to the Bible account. They are all dead. There is more reason to accept the Bible account provided, since an Egyptian pharaoh, Thutmose I, died in 1493 BCE, a date only 2 years different from 1495. As I subsequently determined when I entertained 1495 BCE as nearly correct. I now had further reason for interest in 1493 BCE, and the Pharaoh Thutmose I became another focus for investigation. There were other facts about that Pharaoh. Thutmose I, his firstborn son died, which was also what happened in the Exodus. The death of the firstborn sons was one of the plagues. All these, but there were many, many agreeable facts that just made it. And Hatshepsut, his daughter, wrote the account that she wrote, about which we've already talked, concerning the vagabonds in the Northland. And so so many things agreed. It turned out that 1493 BCE satisfied a lunar requirement. This is incredible. It's phenomenal that of the biblical record of the first Jewish Sabbath, which had to fall on a certain day of the month, according to the Bible account. And that only will line up in certain years, right? It's not the same every year for the lunar months. So, in other words, the Saturday won't fall on that same day of the lunar month every year. So that's a requirement which occurs in the year of the Exodus, 1493. So it can't be 1495. It has to be 1493 unless, you know, the Sabbath falls on the right day. But we think 1493 fits every requirement. And Pharaoh Amenhotep I, I mean, we're always open-minded, but this is the best date that we've ever seen for the Exodus date is 1493, based on everything. Pharaoh Amenhotep I appears to fully agree with this date because of the rising of the star Sothis, which is also called the Dog Star. According to the Ebers Papyrus, which was a document from the reign of Amenhotep I, we've been able to date his reign, and then after him, the reign of Thutmose I, which leads to his death in 1493 BCE being perfectly in line. So it's a phenomenal discovery about the date of the Exodus. And now we're going to read Ecclesiastes, our scripture for today, 11 and 7. The light is also sweet, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun, little children. 2 Samuel 23. And these are the last words of David, the utterance of David, the son of Jesse, and the utterance of the able-bodied man that was raised up on high, the anointed of the God of Jacob, and the pleasant one of the melodies of Israel. The Spirit of Jehovah it was that spoke by me, and his word was upon my tongue. The God of Israel said, to me the Rock of Israel spoke, when one ruling over mankind is righteous, ruling in the fear of God, then it is as the light of morning when the sun shines forth, a morning without clouds. From brightness, from rain, there is grass out of the earth. For is not my household like that with God? Because it is an indefinitely lasting covenant that he has assigned to me, nicely put in order in everything and secured. Because it is all my salvation and all my delight, is that not why he will make it grow? But good-for-nothing persons are chased away like thorn bushes, all of them, for it is not by the hand that they should be taken. When a man touches them, he should be fully armed with iron and the shaft of a spear, and with fire they will thoroughly be burned up. Those are the final words of David, concluded. And now, verse 8, these are the names of the mighty men that belong to David. Joshebashibeth, a Tachimonite, the head of the three, he was brandishing his spear, over 800 slain at one time. Next to him, Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the son of Ahohi, was among the three mighty men with David when they taunted the Philistines. They had gathered themselves there for the battle, and so the men of Israel retreated. He it was that rose up and kept striking down the Philistines until his hand wearied, and his hand kept cleaving to the sword, so that Jehovah performed a great salvation on that day. And as for the people, they returned behind him, only to strip those struck down. And next to him was Shammah, the son of Agi the Hararite, and the Philistines proceeded to gather themselves to Lehi, where there happened then to be a tract of the field full of lentils, and the people themselves fled because of the Philistines, but he took his stand in the middle of the tract and delivered it, and kept striking down the Philistines, so that Jehovah performed a great salvation. And 3 of the 30 head ones proceeded to go down and come at the harvest to David at the cave of Adullam. And the tent village of the Philistines was encamped in the low plain of the Rephaim. So we've seen the three mighty ones that were mentioned. There was Joshebeshebeth, a Tekemanite, Eleazar the son of Dodo, the son of Ahohi, and Shammah the son of Agi, the Hararite. And they, 3 of the 30 head ones proceeded to go down and come to David at the harvest. And David was then in the place hard to approach, and an outpost of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. After a while, David expressed his craving and said, "Oh, that I might have a drink of the water from the cistern of Bethlehem that is at the gate." At that, the 3 mighty men forced their way into the camp of the Philistines and drew water from the cistern of Bethlehem that is at the gate, and came carrying and bringing it to David. But he did not consent to drink it, but poured it out to Jehovah. And he went on to say, "It is unthinkable on my part, O Jehovah, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of the men going at the risk of their souls?" And he did not consent to drink it. These are the things the 3 mighty men did. Wow, right. The 3 mighty men did that. As for Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, he was the head of the 30, and he was brandishing his spear over 300 slain ones, and he had a reputation like the 3, although he was distinguished even more than the rest of the 30, and he came to be their chief. To the rank of the first 3 he did not come. As for Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man who did many deeds in Kabzeel, he himself struck down the 2 sons of Ariel of Moab, and he himself descended and struck down a lion inside a water pit on a day of snowfall. And he it was that struck down the Egyptian man that was of extraordinary size. Though there was a spear in the hand of the Egyptian, yet he went on down to him with a rod and snatched the spear away from the Egyptian's hand and killed him with his own spear. These things Benaiah the son of Jehoiada did, and he had a reputation like the 3 mighty men. Although he was distinguished even more than the 30, to the rank of the 3 he did not come. But David appointed him to his own bodyguard. Asahel, the brother of Joab, was among the 30. Elhanan, the son of Dodo of Bethlehem. Shammah, the Haradite. Elika, the Haradite. Helez, the Paltite. Ira, the son of Ikesh, the Tekoite. Abiezer, the Anathothite. Mebane, the Hushathite. Zalmon, the Ahohite. Meharai, the Netophathite. Heleb, the son of Baana, the Netophathite. Ittai, the son of Ribai of Gibeah, of the sons of Benjamin. Benaiah, a Pirathonite. Hiddai, of the torrent valleys of Gaash. Abialbon, the Arbathite. Asmaveth, the Barhumite. Eliabah, the Shealbanite. The sons of Jashon. Jonathan, Shammah, the Hararite. Ahiam, the son of Sherar, the Hararite. Eliphelet, the son of Ahazbi, the son of the Maacathite. Eliam, the son of Ahithophel, the Galanite. Hezro, the Carmelite. Peori, the Arbite. Igal, the son of Nathan of Zobah. Bani, the Gadite. Zelek, the Ammonite. Neari, the Beerothite, the armor-bearers of Joab, the son of Zeruiah. Ira the Ithrite, Gareb the Ithrite, Uriah the Hittite, 37 in all. And when we add them all up, we get 30 in total, apart from excluding the armor bearers of Joab and excluding also the sons of Jashon mentioned there, if they are intended to be the in the other 7 that contribute to the 37 in all. So that's what we've got. It's remarkable. It's not sure which one or who Jonathan is there. Which one is Jonathan? It's the son of Saul. Jonathan was, of course, killed. Unless this referred to him before his death, but I don't think so. Well, there's Jonathan mentioned here in 1 Chronicles 11:34, the son of Shage the Hararite. Jonathan, the son of Shage the Hararite. That's looking like what it is. These are the mighty men listed in 1 Chronicles chapter 11. Okay, let's go to our reading from Ezekiel chapter 1. How are we doing for time? We're doing well. Now it came about in the 30th year in the fourth month on the fifth day of the month. The 30th year, one interpretation which looks very, very plausible, is the 30th year of the Jubilee. And the Jubilee is dated according to a very thorough analysis in order to determine and arrive at the first year of the first Jubilee in 1422 BCE. And then we move on, and every 50 years there's another Jubilee until the Jubilee of 622, 29 years later, is 593, which is the fifth year of the exile. So it says the fifth day of the month, and while I was in the midst of the exile people by the river Kibar, that the heavens were opened, Ezekiel wrote, and I began to see visions of God. And then he says, on the fifth day of the month, that is in the fifth year of the exile. So the fifth year of the exile would be 593. So it agrees with the idea of the 30th year of the Jubilee as well. Fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim, 593 BCE. The word of Jehovah occurred in the genealogy. The Jubilees occur on every 50 years, for example, 572, 622, 672, 722, 772, 822, 872, etc., all the way back to 1422. The word of Jehovah on this fifth day of the month, right, in the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim, who was exiled in 597 by Nebuchadnezzar. He was the son of Jehoiakim. The word of Jehovah occurred specifically to Ezekiel, the son of Buzi, the priest in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kibar, and upon him in that place the hand of Jehovah came to be. And I began to see and look, Ezekiel writes, there was a tempestuous wind coming from the north, a great cloud mass and quivering fire, and it had a brightness all around, and out of the midst of it there was something like the look of electrum. Out of the midst of the fire. Electrum. It's like lightning or something. Electrum is a shining alloy of gold and silver. That's right. Okay. I stand corrected. And out of the midst of it there was the likeness. Now there's going to be lightning as well. There was a likeness of four living creatures, and this was how they looked. They had the likeness of earthling man, and each one had four faces, and each one of them four wings, and their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was like the sole of the foot of a calf, and they were gleaming as with the glow of burnished copper. And there were the hands of a man under their wings on their four sides, and the four of them had their faces and their wings. Their wings were joining one to the other. They would not turn when they went. They would go each one straight forward. And as for the likeness of their faces, the four of them had a man's face with a lion's face to the right, and the four of them had a bull's face on the left. The four of them also had an eagle's face. That is the way their faces were. And their wings were spreading out upward. Each one had two joining to each other, and two were covering their bodies. And they would go each one straight forward. To wherever the spirit would incline to go, they would go. They would not turn as they went. And as for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire. Something like the appearance of torches was moving back and forth between the living creatures. And the fire was bright, and out of the fire there was lightning going forth. And on the part of the living creatures there was a going forth and a returning, as with the appearance of lightning. And I kept seeing the living creatures. Why look? There was one wheel on the earth beside the living creatures by the four faces of each. As for the appearance of the wheels in their structure, it was like the glow of chrysolite. And the four of them had one likeness, and their appearance and their structure, the wheels, were just as when a wheel proved to be in the midst of a wheel. When they went, they would go on their four respective sides. They would not turn another way when they went. And as for their rims, they had such height that they caused fearfulness, and their rims were full of eyes all around the four of them. And when the living creatures went, the wheels would go beside them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels would be lifted up. Wherever the spirit inclined to go, they would go, the spirit inclining to go there. And the wheels themselves would be lifted up close alongside them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. When they went, these would go. And when they stood still, these would stand still. And when they were lifted up from the earth, the wheels would be lifted up close alongside them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. And over the heads of the living creatures there was the likeness of an expanse, like the sparkle of awesome ice, stretched out over their heads up above. And under the expanse their wings were straight, one to the other. Each one had two wings covering on this side, and each one had two covering on that side, their bodies. And I got to hear the sound of their wings, a sound like that of vast waters, like the sound of the Almighty One. When they went, the sound of a tumult, like the sound of an encampment. When they stood still, they would let their wings down. And there came to be a voice above the expanse that was over their head. When they stood still, they would let their wings down. And above the expanse that was over their head, there was something in appearance like sapphire stone, the likeness of a throne. And upon the likeness of the throne, there was a likeness of someone in appearance like an earthling man upon it up above. And I got to see something like the glow of electrum, like the appearance of fire all around inside thereof. From the appearance of his hips and upward, and from the appearance of his hips and downward, I saw something like the appearance of fire. And he had a brightness all around. There was something like the appearance of the bow that occurs in a cloud mass on the day of a pouring rain. That is how the appearance was of the brightness round about. It was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Jehovah. When I got to see it, then I fell upon my face, and I began to hear the voice of one speaking. That's the end of Ezekiel chapter 1. Remarkable account. It's a terrifying or fear-inspiring account. Is it not? It even strikes fear into me to read that account, because it's so terrifying. The description of these four living creatures that Ezekiel saw in a vision in the fifth year of the exile of Jehoiakim in BCE 593, which was also coinciding precisely with the 30th year of the Jubilee. Although he doesn't say what the 30th year applied to specifically, it could easily have been the 30th year of the Jubilee, as we see in the chronology of Jehovah, with the first Jubilee beginning in 1422 BCE. And also we know how many Jubilees there were before the destruction of the temple. There were indeed 17, I believe, is that right? 17, what's 17 times 50 is 850 years. If I'm doing that correctly in my head, I think that's right. 850 plus 17th Jubilee, during the 17th Jubilee when the temple was destroyed, and that's how we count back 16 Jubilees, or 800 years from 622, and we get 1422 exactly, which is only just about precisely 30 years after Israel crossed the Jordan, which is almost the same time that Joshua ruled after the death of Moses, at the time when they crossed the Jordan. So the chronology works out perfectly in the genealogy, according to the book of Ezekiel and what is from Jewish tradition about the destruction of the temple during the 17th Jubilee. It's a lot to spit out. 1 John chapter 1, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have viewed attentively, and our hands felt concerning the word of life. Yes, the life was made manifest, and we have seen and are bearing witness and reporting to you the everlasting life, which was with the Father and was made manifest to us. That which we have seen and heard, we are reporting also to you, that you too may be having a sharing with us. Furthermore, this sharing of ours is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And so we are writing these things that our joy may be in full measure. And this is the message which we have heard from him and are announcing to you, that God is light, and there is no darkness at all in union with him. If we make the statement we are having a sharing with him, and yet we go on walking in the darkness, we are lying and are not practicing the truth. However, if we are walking in the light as he himself is in the light, we do have a sharing with one another, and the blood of Jesus his Son cleanses us from all sin. If we make the statement we have no sin, we are misleading ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and righteous so as to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we make the statement we have not sinned, we are making him a liar and his word is not in us. That's the end of 1 John chapter 1. It's a wonderful book of the letter of the first letter, that is, of John, the disciple whom Jesus used to love, as he also describes himself in his own book, the book, the Gospel of John. So we're done with our scriptural study for today, little ones. We do have about 5 minutes and more remaining today. We don't have to use it all, but I wanted to talk a little bit about health, and I just think that people don't understand, or we don't, myself included, we don't appreciate how important health is, and we don't realize that, well, we don't know how to get our health, first of all. We don't know how to get our health, that is. We just, but even if we knew how to get our health, we might think that it's too big of a sacrifice to get our health. We might think that we might lose out on enjoying life if we sought or tried to get our health, because we might think, oh, we'd have to deprive ourselves of this and that and the other thing in order to be fully healthy, and we are not sure whether there's any benefit or what the benefit is of being healthy. What are we going to do with our health once we have it? But the amazing thing about it is, we don't have our purpose. We can't even find our true purpose in life until we have our health. At least this is speaking for my own self, from my experience. This is what happened in my case. Once I discovered vitamin K2 in the MK7 form, I started taking it, and I got so much more energy that I was able to accomplish, and, well, I was doing so many things with that health that it was accomplishing the writing of articles and doing things. Now, I had written articles previously, right? And at that time I wasn't as healthy, but I was working hard, but I wasn't able to do as many different things earlier on until I really got healthier. And when I got my health, I was redefining what I wanted to do. I mean, I was able to do more work. Now, I've said that my articles were not as intensive in the later articles that I wrote. I didn't do as much research as I did earlier. So I had a lot of, or I used a lot of energy in the earlier articles. The way I recall it, I used a very large amount of energy in the writing of the earlier articles, but my health was deteriorating as I was writing those. And the other thing is, of course, I would never have even sought to write the articles if I didn't get my health in the first place, which happened because I discovered calcium, right? I discovered how important calcium was to my health, and that gave me more energy, and then I was able to redefine that I could, my whole life I could redefine, and I did. I redefined my life so that I would include the writing of the history of the world, and it didn't happen overnight, that redefinition of my life, but the extra amount of energy that I had, which is a good health, that I obtained through trying to learn more and applying what I learned about calcium and vitamin D initially, and calcium was, they were all I knew about, and magnesium together with vitamin D and calcium. That was all I knew about it initially, originally. Now that I've learned about MK4 and MK7, the forms of, there are nine known forms of vitamin K2, but those two forms, MK7 and MK4, now that I've learned about those two, I'm taking about, and MK4, you need to take about 2 milligrams at a time in order for it to really benefit you. So I'm taking 2 milligrams twice a day, roughly, of the MK4. And I'm taking vitamin D with, it comes with the D in it, in a liquid form. So I'm ending up taking a lot of vitamin D just from that alone. That's because if I take 4 milligrams, that's going to be 40 drops, which is 20,000 units of vitamin D every time I take, every day basically, when I take the liquid MK4. But the MK7, I'm also taking about 12 of those a day, which is 12,000 units of D, as well as the 1,200 micrograms, or about a milligram or so of MK7, 12 times the 100 micrograms, or whatever it is, 120 micrograms. So I'm taking a lot of these things, but I actually don't need any more than about 6,000 units of D with the MK7 if I only take six or 700 micrograms, and that's what I need basically per day of the MK7, because it stays in my body, it stays in a person's body more than about 3 days, whereas MK4 is only there for 4 hours. You need MK4 regularly. But I'm also taking the omegas, 369 omegas, krill, vitamin E and glutathione, and cod liver oil. But the vitamin E and glutathione are an additional thing, with boron and selenium, and basically, and also I'm taking amino acid supplement too, Freeminos. All those things together every day are what make everything happen for the better, and my arthritis goes away when I do that. Especially the MK7 is able to get rid of the arthritis with, when taken in conjunction with those other things. That's all for today. It's December 24th, 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 15:54 Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. Have a wonderful, wonderful experience today. And this is, on my behalf, Gully, my wind-up watch, and also this is Cassie, my digital watch, saying bye for now.